I'm Robin Amler of IBS Intelligence. You're listening to the IBS iViews podcast. With me is Chris Skinner, advisor to governments and C-suite executives around the world, author also of several books, most recently, Intelligent Money. What is your thesis in Intelligent Money, Chris?
The main thrust of the book is the way in which artificial intelligence is integrated into the financial system. But more than that, the friction between centralized and decentralized money and how you regulate both the intelligence and artificial intelligence around money, but also the decentralization of money and how crypto challenges governments.
Control of the economy is going to be taken away from these institutions if money, and I think it is an if money is decentralized.
Well, that is the thrust of my thesis, which is, can governments retain control? Can countries and central banks retain control if the network of the people disagrees with them? And this is what the cryptocurrency challenge is all about, which is the network of the people says that we can control ourselves through our democratization, decentralization of the network, and governments no longer matter. It's an interesting dialogue. I've been having it for over a decade, and I haven't quite solved the answer yet. My answer is you have to have a regulated authority somewhere, but is that authority the government or is it the network of the people?
Well, you bring me to the point where I have to say the title of the book is Intelligent Money, but it seems to me you're going to need intelligent people, and I think there's a question mark there.
Well, there's a huge question mark, which is, I've been involved in cryptocurrency for 15 years, and I've seen huge amounts of waste and Wild West territory where, because it's not regulated, people have lost millions or billions of dollars or other currencies speculating. This is a big challenge. So the intelligence comes in to say, if you're doing this, is it actually something you should be doing? And that's where the book balances these two perspectives, which is to say, yes, you can speculate to invest and to make money, but if it's unregulated, you need to be advised. And so what is intelligent advice that goes around those investments?
I think there's more than just advice necessary, though. As we move into what is going to be a digital future, security is a big issue, cybersecurity, because the important thing I want from a bank in general is for my money to be there when I want it to be there and not for somebody else to have nicked it.
I always come back to the basics, which is the reason we need banks is not for banking, it's for trust. And the trust that we have in banks is that if we lost our money, we'd get it back because they have an insurance scheme in most economies and they're backed by governments in most economies. And therefore, you know that if you lose your money, you'll get it back. Whereas the problem I have with the network of the people is if you lose your money, you don't get it back and you don't have anyone to call. If, for example, you had a problem with Facebook or with Google, what's their phone number? There is no phone number. You can't get your money back. You can't get the trust back. There's lots of issues in this space. And in fact, to be honest, the core of this space is trust. And it's all about, can I trust you? Can I trust that you'll look after my money? I've recently had an issue with my bank. They've stopped trusting me because I've been using cryptocurrency and taking down money from Coinbase. Now I don't trust my bank because I don't trust that they are looking after me. So it's that balance of trust that's the real sort of thread that goes through the whole of financial services.
Which also extends to the other point I was going to make at this juncture, and that's about financial inclusion. There are an awful lot of people still who aren't involved in the digital money party, and it sounds as though we've got to bring them with us. How do we do that?
The question you're asking there is a mixture of things, because the movement of money, making payments, is actually quite a simple thing. And a lot of people have solved that from a financial inclusion perspective. My main case studies being M-Pesa in Kenya, which everyone knows about, started in 2007, or Alipay and other services in China started around the same time. And in fact, I'm now involved in a new initiative looking at financial inclusion across the Middle East, North Africa region, working from a company in Egypt. So financial inclusion, I guess the question is making basic payments versus deposit taking. So basic payments is very simple. If you have a mobile telephone, you can make a payment from anywhere in the world. I was asked by a journalist in the 1990s, are you seriously saying, Chris, we can make a payment from the top of Mount Everest? I said, absolutely, you will make a payment from the top of Mount Everest. And in the 2010s, that dream came true, sponsored by Standard Chartered, as it turned out, with Breeze. Today, anybody anywhere in the world can make a payment, but getting banking services is different because a banking service is deposit taking, storage, trust, and value exchange. And that's why you need to have licensing, because if I leave my money on your platform and you lost it, how do I get it back? And that's the trust we have in deposit taking banking licenses.
And that, of course, was my key question. The book is called Intelligent Money. What are the steps on the road?
The key starting point, if you're an incumbent traditional bank, is that you have to have smart data, because you can't be intelligent if you're dumb. An awful lot of banks are dumb with data. They have it spread around the organization across silo-based systems that are based upon, you know, decades of development that have separated the data, and you can't analyze that data because it's not consolidated, rationalized, and intelligent. So first of all, you have to have intelligent data. This is why many of the challenger banks and the neobanks and the fintech startups are winning space, because they are intelligent with data, because they started with a clean sheet of paper and they created their organization on the basis of intelligent data. So to be artificially intelligent, you have to be intelligent with data. That's the core of the message. If you're a traditional bank and you want to be intelligent with data, my main message is that you have to rebuild the organization's data model. You have to start from scratch and rebuild the company with data, because that's the jewel in the crown. And to do that is very difficult, because you have to run the bank and change the bank. But I've met many banks that have successfully done this. A good example for me is DBS in Singapore. Because what happened there is that the bank was trying to acquire another bank and it failed. And the board said to the chief executive, well, take that money and change the bank. And he said, well, what am I going to do about delivering the shareholder return during that period? And they said, don't worry about it. You know, we'll leave that to the CFO and the COO. Your job is to change the bank to be an intelligent bank. And that's the reason why DBS is now held up as a shining example of one of the most intelligent banks in the world, because the CEO and the chairman spent years changing the bank with a huge budget with a clear agenda.
And it sounds like they had an intelligent board behind them to do it as well.
Absolutely.
Not everybody, I think, is going to be so lucky in their C-suite.
You could look at someone like JP Morgan Chase. To me, they're also a very good example of a bank that's evolved and revolutionized their business model to be digital. They're not there yet. And Jamie Dimon has faults, for example, his cynicism around cryptocurrency, in that he's, you know, spent years saying it's a scam and a fraud. And yet now they offer trading in cryptocurrencies because their customers want it. And I think that's the critical thing, which is that you have to follow what the customer need is and what the customer wants. So if the customer wants to trade in crypto, that's the customer's right. Even though you don't believe in it as a bank, you know, Jamie Dimon's allowed Chase to offer crypto funds and services and trading, which is admirable. It may not be something that you and I like, but if the customer likes it, you have to offer it.
Crypto comes back to the issue of security and also volatility. It is wrong, I think, at the moment to describe what we call in shorthand crypto as cryptocurrency. It's not. It's a speculative commodity at the moment. It's not a measure of exchange. People do not use it to go out and shop. They use it to see if they can make a speculative gain.
That's actually not really correct, Robin. It's a whole mixture of things. So you have the cryptocurrency technology of blockchain, which is something that banks believe in as something they can use because it's a ledger that can be a platform globally for recording transactions. And on that basis, that technology is a good technology. Cryptocurrency in the form of Bitcoin or other currencies is something that we often say do not work. And yet it can work if it's wrapped up in the right medium. By way of example, Watford football team in Britain are sponsored by a Bitcoin trading platform. To get the Watford signed t-shirt, I had to sign up to that trading platform, and I got the Watford signed shirt using Bitcoin because that was what I was forced to use, and it worked. And it's actually very easy once I'd signed up. And then that was the whole point, which is once you've signed up to something that's very easy to transact and trade, then you could use it for almost anything, from buying pizzas to investing in Lloyds Bank shares or whatever shares you want to invest in. So it's really a case of form factor.
You're the expert. I'm not going to get into a fight with you about that.
I'm not a Watford fan, by the way. I'm a Spurs fan.
Well, what happens next? We started off talking about whether it was going to be government-led, whether it was going to be the voice or the will of the people-led. What's your prediction on that?
It's very difficult, to be honest, Robin, because I'm a similar age to yourself, and so I have certain perspectives in that, for example, I still believe a branch is needed, which a lot of people disagree with, but I think a branch is needed for trust. And so I always come back to trust. A branch is not needed for advice or for transactions or service. It's just needed to know that there's somewhere I can knock on the door and look someone in the face, eye to eye, and believe that I can get my money. Show me the money. So I have a lot of other colleagues who say everything is now going to be digital, remote, and you don't need any humans involved. I completely disagree with this. So when I put forward the idea of intelligent money, the idea of intelligent money is that money thinks for you. You can give your accounts parameters and perspectives that relate personally to you as an individual, and that will be managed and automated and purely interact with you on an as-needed basis on the fact that you've set those parameters. And at some point, if something goes wrong and you need help, then I believe that's when the human will always be involved. In fact, I just had this discussion the other day about, is your chatbot compliant? Dealing with a chatbot is fine. But I had an incident with a friend the other day who was dealing with a bank's chatbot, and the bank's chatbot said, oh, yeah, we'll refund the money that you were falsely charged. And then halfway through, changed its mind, because it decided that the bank did not need to refund that money. And yet the bank now was not compliant with the agreement with the customer because it hadn't been trained properly. And it's those sorts of processes. So in the future, my belief is that an awful lot of effort will be made by all institutions, not just banks, but banks specifically because of trust, to train AI to understand the processes and risk and regulations and compliance and make sure that they're complying with those processes. So it's training and maintaining the AI to do what's right for the customer and for the institution that will be the future jobs in this world.
Chris Skinner, author of Intelligent Money, thank you very much.